I know that I have thoroughly enjoyed the preparation for this class and looking forward to the additional material that I'm going to be presenting this quarter. Sometimes you go through a study of a Bible topic from a different angle and your eyes get opened. And this has done that for me. I hope it will be so for you. We're studying deception, overcoming the deception of this age. I think that was the proper title for the quarter. And the outlines and previous audio is up at aubeacon.com at the very top of the page if you wanted to get the other outlines. Of course, we have some others here. We've been pointing out that the battlefield for everything that is valuable to us goes through the battlefield of deception. Whether you're talking about heaven or hell, whether you're talking about making it financially in life, even your dating relationships and other things, decisions you make, we have to learn. We want to see what's true. None of us like to be lied to. None of us really want to have a false impression of what is real, and only to find out later that, man, we had it all wrong. And so keep in mind, we're just not talking about people deceiving us, and we're not just talking about the spiritual realm. We're going to be focusing on that here. But life, and certainly your relationship with God, is crucial to be able to discern and see. We've already talked about last week, we're starting to shift. The title of this lesson is How God's Love Protects Us from Deception. We talked about the external deceiver in the first two lessons of how somebody could come in and try to deceive you. We're now shifting our focus to our own hearts. And this is where the biggest battlefield is going to be fought. If you and I will truly be committed to being fair and honest in everything, that is the best defense against us being deceived. And I'll be establishing that. Last week we talked about the problem we're facing in our society and even within the church. People don't like to hear lessons. Some do. I've always enjoyed them because I know they're valuable, but discerning good and evil. Now, to anybody involved in evangelism, man, you know that's a battlefield. You know, you want to learn everything you can about helping people that is in deception and come out. But if we're not very evangelistic, we're not thinking about working with others, we kind of just don't want the boat to get rocked. But when it comes to deception, committing yourself to seeing what is right costs you and me. And the quote I liked last week, it says, in an age where discernment is viewed as a vice and gullibility as a virtue, there is a price to be paid if one decides to be, quote, picky about what to believe and how to live. And that's true in every area of our life. So again, the culture may frown on us, but it'll bless you and it'll bless those you love if you're committed to see what is right. Now, tonight, we did get to finish summarizing last week. If we're going to be committed to what is right, and we talk about how God hates every false way, over and over again, Psalms 119, you see that. You see Hebrews 1:9, nature of God, you've loved righteousness, hated lawlessness. And so we started talking about some elements of deception. Sometimes people say, well, I didn't lie. In that one case, let's say, you know, you're at your office and somebody calls, and I hope you never do this. Somebody answers the phone, it's for you. Well, tell them I'm not here. Well, I told a lie and I've got somebody else tell a lie. Oh, I didn't tell them directly there's a lie. We can play games and be involved in lies, and we're lying to ourselves. And so, briefly, there could have been a longer list. We know that a flat contradiction is a lie. This is what we talked about in last class. We talked about a statement. It would be true if people gave the whole story, but giving a partial story, we could deceive people. Again, I won't review that tonight, but that's another lie. I didn't outline three. Equivocation. Equivocation is where you start playing word games, where you've got a definition of a word that you can use it in two different ways. And so one way, I meant it this way, to somebody else you meant it this way. And equivocation is where you're determined to try to hide what you believe. And we talked about the code talker in lesson 1 and 2. The code talker does that all the time. They don't want to be nailed down, and so they'll use equivocation. A statement taken out of context is a lie. We talked about how they accused Jesus of literally trying to tear the temple down and build it in 3 days, and they took that context incorrectly. He wasn't literally talking about the physical temple. Even his enemies understood that. And then I think we finished with duplicity. And I think that's where the bell rung last week. So let's talk about duplicity. Duplicity is where somebody, there's an old politician years ago, I'll never forget it. This guy, he was from Fort Worth, Texas, and he had a public statement. He came to the people, "We only want to help you." And the guy ended up being just as corrupt as can be, and he was trying to defend that which was false, but he goes, "We want to help you." And really, his motive was, I want power, and a lot of politicians do this, and we're going to make you think I'm your friend so I can get power. But in the Bible, there's cases of this where a person appears to be on your side, but they got a motive behind it. Judas, Matthew 26, 48 and 49. What did he do when he came up to Jesus? What did he say to Jesus, and what did he do to Jesus? The Bible says, now his betrayer had given them a sign, whomever I kiss, he's the one, sees him. Immediate, he went up to Jesus and said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and kissed him. So Judas was just full of warm fuzzies right then, right? He appeared that way. And there's a case of duplicity. How about this one? Oh, I love this one. Here are people that wanted to kill Jesus. Somebody read with me. We'll get some other readers here. Luke 20, 21 through 23. Let's have another reader on the chart or in the Bible. Luke 20, 21 through 23. Let's have another reader. Here are some people came up trying to butter Jesus up, okay?
And they asked him, saying, "Teacher, we know that you say and teach rightly, and you do not show personal favoritism, but teach the way of God and truth. Is it lawful for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But he perceived their craftiness and said to them, "Why do you
think?" Yep. "Oh, you're the greatest teacher there's ever been, Jesus. You're just teaching the truth." Did they believe that? They wanted him killed. And so they said, "We're going to have a trap question, so we're going to make him think we're sincere." Brethren, that's a lie. Are you following me? If that's done to Jesus and the lie's wrong, we don't need to do that either. We've got to be careful. We can play games and be real big-time liars. But we never said a lie. And that's the point I want to make to you. We could develop this. But whatever process that we use to deceive another, how about this one? By not saying a word. Could there be times where our silence would be a lie? Yes.
Let's say that you've got someone who... okay, let's say you're preaching a lesson Sunday.
Okay.
Or someone in your position, right?
Okay.
Teaching the lesson. They could be saying any number of things that are completely false, grandstanding under a false pretense, and maybe I could know that, but not say anything. I would be lying because I know it's false, and everyone is being told something that is just patently untrue.
I think there's the potential for that, and maybe another situation like this class. Okay, you know, I make some demand, either you speak up or not, and I realize sometimes you don't speak up. But I've heard the illustration, of course, this used to be done in marriage ceremonies. Does anyone in the audience know that this couple has got the right to marry, something to that effect? Either speak now or forever hold your peace, you know. And let's say you knew they didn't have a right and you held your peace. So, again, there's some more nuances to that. But I just wanted you to see in this list, we can technically not say a direct lie and be the biggest deceiver there is. Okay? What if we turn in a test that we've copied somebody else's lessons and we turn it in as our own? Is that deception? Of course it is. A lot of others. So again, I'm just trying to say this. We got to be serious. And we're going to be weird and we're going to be different in this society. Now, this probably is the most important part of my whole study of how can we avoid being deceived. We can avoid being deceived by being absolutely committed the two terms that Jesus talks about a lot, and the Old Testament talks about a lot, and that is loving justice and mercy. One way I could describe it is having a pure heart, or as Jesus talked about Philip, that he is without guile. So let's talk about justice and mercy here. Let's talk about purity of heart first. Matthew 5:6-8. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they should see God. Then Proverbs 22:11. He who loves purity of heart and has grace on his lips, the king will be his friend. What I'm talking about here is fairness. And you know how we can best be tested if we're fair people? What are some of the acid tests for us? To determine, if we're looking in the mirror and looking at how we in our life, what things that we do in our life will be acid test if we're not to determine whether or not we are a fair person?
I think probably how we deal with failure says a lot about whether or not we're a fair person.
I think that is a good one. What do we tend to do in failure? What's the tendency?
To blame others.
And really what I'm getting at here, that's a real good test. And sometimes it may not be blame others, but you know, we can do other things that we just really don't want to see our own failures. And that's part about honesty. We've got to be willing to see the warts in the mirror that we have, you know, because God can help us. But my acid test is how we deal with others. Do we hear a lot today where people, or certainly on news shows and things, where people are attacked? We hear that often. I want to warn you, we all have political views. Be careful, even with the candidate you love. Be careful. Politics has become the most slanderous venue right now, worse than ever. And that's a pretty strong statement. I love to study history. History's had some pretty bad times. And if you hear something bad about another person, what should we do? If we love justice and mercy, let's talk about justice. Let's first start there. And let me see if we've had mercy mentioned here. Sorry about this. I'm on the battery. And so my computer was shut down. What is justice? I didn't have the definition up here. Maybe later in the outline. What's justice? Certainly we know in courtroom, when you have evidence heard, when you want justice, what do you want? Huh? You want what has actually happened to be recognized by others and proclaimed, whatever it is. And let me jump ahead to the verses on justice. This is something talked about quite a bit. Here in Luke 11:42, Jesus talked about the heart of the Pharisees, but listen to this. Woe to you Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and all manner of herbs and pass by justice and the love of God. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Justice. Have you ever been judged unfairly? We've lived life, and by now you've had that happen to you. Do you enjoy that when that happens? Do you really particularly appreciate it when it's a close friend or somebody else know better? Maybe even your own parents. My own parents have misjudged me. Now, a lot of times they nailed me, and sometimes I got away with things, you know. And so, do you feel real warm and fuzzy when somebody's misjudged you? You know, my daughter Emily was our law and order child. That's one thing she hated was injustice, you know. And I was not thrilled with it. But you know, when we normally get really excited about injustice is when? When do we get most excited about it?
It's happening to us.
When it's us. But we got love of God in us. Who are we going to be concerned about with justice? Everybody. Oh man, I'm telling you this, how can I say it? This will crimp our style a little bit. If we're the one that kind of like to have a lamp at somebody other's expense, and we got some people that love to just make judgments about another and talk about them, and we go, oh, yeah, yeah. Watch out. Now, let me tell you why this is important. If we do not have fairness or justice in our dealings, we will be prime targets to be deceived. The only way I know, the strongest way for us to avoid being deceived is to be absolutely committed to the principle of justice, regardless of who it is, especially if it's somebody who's hurt us. Are you listening? I know you are. I'm really trying to emphasize this here. What happens if we are unfair to others intentionally? What does that reveal about our hearts?
You're vindictive.
What's that?
Vindictive.
Likely it's bitterness. And you've heard me talk about bitterness. And I'm going to talk about it more in this series. Bitterness will make you a crazy person. Yes.
It might even be more selfishness. If you treat another person unfairly but are upset when you're treated unfairly, then that just shows that you're self-centered.
Yeah, I'm the center of the universe. Well, you know, that was just a sincere mistake I made about you by saying you were a liar and a thief and an Alabama fan, you know, whatever it is. You know, just joking. I'm an Alabama fan, so I'm just joking there. But a little football humor here. But, you know, you can... we can be very selfish. And listen, I'm tempted here too. I remember years ago I was preaching full-time in Abbeville, Alabama, 1979. The ancient days. I came up here to Auburn and Lynn Huggins was working under Dave Bradford as a preacher. And we'd get together a lot. And I remember one time I was kind of concerned about a brother and I started venting. You know, I bet you he's doing this and he's this. And this is his attitude. And he stopped me. He says, Larry, you don't know that. And I stopped for a moment. You're right. I'm sorry. Thank you. The standard I'm giving here is a high and hard standard. Okay? You're going to catch me still violating. I'll do it. I'll sometimes jump to conclusion, love to hear something bad about somebody else. We've got to be willing to be fair. And I want the best way to remind you, what's a verse that might help us have this kind of mercy? What's the two greatest commandments? Yeah, you would love your neighbor as yourself. How about the golden rule? What's that one?
Do unto others.
As you'd have them do unto you. And on this hang all the law and prophets, Matthew 7:12. So what I'm talking about here is not just, as a matter of fact, we go back to that verse. I think we're coming up on it in the outline. Yeah, here it is. This is not slight, tiny things. Probably what caused the Pharisees to be the horrible people they were. They didn't care about this. They gave up on love. They gave up on mercy. So remember the title of our lesson, How the Love of God Can Protect Us from Deception? We got to really be committed to the love of God. All of our heart, all of our mind, all of our soul. And so, like I say, this challenging, most challenging lesson. I found that people who are without guile, people who are fair-minded, what's a characteristic of a fair mind? When all kinds of people making accusations, what does a fair mind do?
Look at both sides.
Yes. I think it's Proverbs 18:17. There's several verses. I'm probably going to quote it wrong, but one is about to hear he speaks for hears a matter, and there's another one where, you know, you hear one person say something and you think it's right, and then that other person comes and all of a sudden the situation's changed. And so it doesn't hurt to take the time. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, that's it. How about this? The first one to plead his cause seems right until his neighbor comes and examines him. And you know what I've come to realize? If we get this right, there's not going to be a whole lot of trouble with false doctrine in the church. You may say, what do you mean, Larry? If we build the fruit of the Spirit and we fight the works of the flesh, we'll have a mind that will work and we're fair-minded. And you know what? False doctrine cannot abide with good-hearted people who open the Bible and they're willing to listen. I'm telling you, the bigger battle with false doctrine is not the arguments of the doctrine, although that's important. It is the condition of the heart of the hearers involved in the debate. Let that sink in. And I didn't gain this. This didn't really come into... I finally see it in the last few years of my life, of seeing a church very badly hurt that I once preached at, and kind of looking like, what happened? And I came to realize, whoa, if somebody gets people angry and mad, they stop thinking. They stop reasoning. They're not fair anymore. And good people will want to talk with them, and they don't want to hear, and they just go, boop, they're gone. Notice the character of God. Exodus 34 and verse 6. Exodus 34 and verse 6. Here God wanted us to know His character. It says, the Lord passed before Him, that's Moses, and proclaimed, the Lord God, merciful and gracious, long-suffering, and abounding in goodness and truth, keeping mercy for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sins. Now notice this, by no means clearing the guilty. We're not talking about the gullible. Oh, I'm not going to judge anyone because I want to be fair. I'm telling you, being fair means sometimes you see that there are things wrong and you and I got to stand up, and that really can cost us. So understand, we're not promoting gullibility here. But we're talking about fair-minded people who are willing to listen and they're humble. And to me, what has helped me a lot to be fair, let me ask you, what would help you to be fair-minded? What are some thoughts that you can think about daily that will help you to be fair-minded with others? Yes. Being thankful to God. Okay. Yes.
Slow to wrath.
That's right. Don't let them press your buttons. Come on, guys. Politics do that all the time. They press the anger button. There we are. We're ready to jump in. We'll believe anything. And so, I tell you, as a guy, you know, I'm Mr. I try to hide my emotions. I don't like being emotional. And I don't, you know, I don't like somebody trying to press my emotion button. You're going to, you know, you might get me emotional by trying to make me emotional. But anyway, manipulators try to shut down the reason. You see, the more disciplined we can come, love of God is key here. Thankful to God. God's been good to me. Have you heard? We sang the song. It's been a while. Were you there when they crucified my Lord? What's the purpose of that song? Were you there when they crucified my Lord? What if we were in the audience that day and we had been the one to cry, crucify, crucify? There's just, to me, I want to be humble. I can be arrogant. I can be unfair. I have been hurt by arrogant people. Don't let me be that. And so again, this is really, really simple. But probably the most effective point I can make in the whole study. Love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. Love your neighbor as yourself. And whatever you want for others to do to you, you do to them. For this is the law and the prophets. That utter commitment to that will help you overcome deception more than anything else that I know. And so again, I know that sounds oversimplistic. But let's talk about some things here. Let's talk about when we are unfair, okay? What things do we do that oftentimes make us unmerciful and unjust? What are some situations that we've been caught up in? What do we tend to do? What are steps that lead us away from being just?
I think generalizing. I align with this group, or I align with this group, and you never question it at all.
Yeah. Matter of fact, in our earlier lessons, remember we talked about the six shortcuts to facts and reason, how all of us, in a lot of areas, make decisions based on things other than fact and reasons. We do. But we've got to, on important things, think about it. And one of the characteristics of deception is that sometimes we don't think if we're identified with a group, we'll just go along with the group thing. My politician said this. And my commentator said this, that's on my political avenue. Therefore, if I'm going to take that position, again, I don't care if you think through politics in detail, okay? Except this. Don't slander. Now, there's some things we can know that's really bad about politicians that we can accurately say. So I want you to know that. Speaking of people who are bad and it's been known, we can say that, but be careful. Do you know what the Archangel Michael did when Satan was disputing with him about the body of Moses? Michael the Archangel, this is in Scripture, did not raise a railing accusation against Satan. Now, have you heard the old song? This is a really old song. It was back in the early 60s when I was a little kid. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. In our society of jumping up there and slandering people and attacking people, it's done all the time in politics. It better not be us. We've got to be careful. We've got to be careful and be fair to the politicians we don't like. Or the football coaches we don't like. Or whatever it is that gets us emotional. We've got to be committed to justice and mercy. Let me give you another verse that has helped me. If you want to know one verse that has slowed me down more than any other verse, it's right here, James 2:13. One day I'm going to be standing before the judgment scene of God. And you know what's going to happen? Let's say the Lord came back tonight. And now there we are before God. What do we want from God more than anything else? What's one of the most precious commodity for us on the day of judgment?
Mercy.
Mercy. Do you hear me? Now, are we going to get to heaven without mercy? No. So, I like this verse. But this is a scary one. For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. And so that's why I want to be careful about my tongue. Now, I'll tell you, I struggle in my mind all the time. You know, I hate political discussions on Facebook. And any time I even swerve toward that, I've got a young student that went to school with my boys. And he's at the totally opposite end of the political realm. And any time I have something on my Facebook that swerves in that realm, he starts questioning me. And I see it, I'm going, oh, no. But you know what I've tried to do? I've always tried to be very fair with him. And he told me the other day, he says, you know what? You're the only person I'll talk politics with because you're fair, that you'll listen. And I hope I'll continue to do that. But it's painful, you know, because I really don't want to win a political argument on Facebook. I'll just tell you, I don't really want to do that. Because that's a realm of irrationality. And I can make some really strong arguments, by the way. If I got with you privately or group and I know something about your heart and you know something about me, we can talk politics. I'm not saying you can't talk about it. But in the public realm, man, you get the crazies that coming at you, and I really don't want to do that. Now, you may have time for that, but that's not, you know, go. Of course, I'm a preacher and an elder, too, and I've got to be super careful what I do publicly. But I struggle there. There are times I want to come back and really, that I've got to control myself. Okay. We make false, you know, the other problem we've got is grudges. And I think that's another thing that keeps us from justice and mercy. What we've got to do, Titus 3:3. For ourselves were once foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving various lusts and pleasures, living in malice and envy, hateful and hating one another. I've told you, I'll tell you again, if any of y'all end up falling away, I'm very serious. Y'all have heard me say this before. I'm going to say it again. The likelihood of the thing that will get you is this. You get hurt by somebody and you become bitter. And you know what we do when we become bitter? Are we fair? Not at all. And you know what else happens? We can believe anything. I mean this, anything. You get angry enough, you'll cast aside any Bible doctrine. And that's how the false teacher does his best work. He gets you mad. He encourages that. And then all you don't do, you want to hurt somebody. You know what a lot of people do? They end up leaving the church. And there are people, they'll take any doctrinal position other than what the church has taught. I call it an anti-Church of Christ position. And you see this on Facebook, and you see this otherwise. And you can't reason with them. And so, don't let that happen to you. I know people have hurt you. Find a way to find forgiveness. Find a way to get it out of your system. Because you can end up living a life of bitterness. And buddy, that's not a way to live. It'll affect every relationship you got. And so again, I won't re-preach that lesson, but that this probably, as an elder, it is our most common battlefield. And we're fighting it now in different areas, you know, we'll help situations. And when you talk about marriage relationships, you're talking about relationships with brethren, it's almost something that is always with us. And so that's why you hear me talk about it as much. I think we've got a good environment here. But man, you can lose an environment in a church, in a family, very quickly if we don't stay on top of this one. And when you are bitter, fairness is the last thing on your mind. Okay, sermon is over on that. Let's go to, let's see, a couple of other verses. This one. Judge not that you be not judged. How about that one? For with what judgment you judged, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Ever heard this verse before? I say that with a smile. How do most people use this verse?
They just use the first sentence.
Huh?
They just use that first sentence and they cut out the rest of the passage.
Yeah, they say, don't discern. Well, we've already read in the verse, in Hebrews 5, the very mark of spiritual growth is discerning what? Between good and evil. So this verse is not saying, stay a baby. Don't worry about wrong or right. Be deceived and be happy. It's not what this is saying. But what does it say? This lines up exactly with what we're talking about tonight.
Saying be fair.
It says be fair. Yes, that's what this is about. Yes.
And even more so than that, at least here, is don't be hypocritical.
Yes. You see, we love to be the center of the universe, and we don't want anybody to hurt us. But you and your situations, well, you know, just a simple mistake, maybe a little exaggeration, but don't get too upset about it. Who are we typically more harsh on? Typically. Others. And so this is the point. Be careful. Understand what you know and what you don't know. Listen, I'm a preacher. I'm an elder. And sometimes when you have a lot of knowledge, and if you're a preacher's child, you know, well, it tends to be this way too, is that, you know, you've got the ability to discern, which is great. But you've got to understand, you can't read minds. And what appears to be something may not be what it appears. John 7:24, judge righteous judgment, not according to appearance. Jesus said that. But notice here, what's the point here? Now, is our judgment going to affect God's judgment at all? If we're evil, is God going to be evil? If we're loose, is God going to be loose? No. What's the point? With what judgment you judge, you will be judged. What's that mean?
What goes around comes around.
Yes. He who judges without mercy will receive no mercy. That's the point of this verse. And so, let me show you the golden rule in a different form. And that's first bell, right? Exodus 22:21. I love this. This is talking about, you know, some of the keys to help us be more just. Notice, you shall neither mistreat a stranger nor oppress him. I love this last statement. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Now I realize these were the early generation. Here's the first giving of the law. Could they remember what it'd be like to be a stranger? What would that do for the Israelites if they remembered being a stranger in Egypt? They really were given everything, weren't they? They were patted on the back and everybody loved them and held them up. Oh, look, we're just so thankful to have the Israelites in our country. Is that how that's how it was before they left Egypt? They were slaves. They had their babies thrown into the river. One generation was thrown into the river and killed. They pleaded with God for help. They were treated as dirt. Now they have their own land and the stranger comes in. What's God saying?
Remember where you came from.
Yeah. Be humble. Remember. And you know what God would say to us, Jesus would say to us? If we start to become unforgiving and unmerciful, what have I done for you? What have I forgiven you? Remember the parable where the guy, you know, was forgiven an amount he could never pay? And then he turned around, somebody owed a little bit, and he threw him in jail? Remember that one? That's the point. If people do this simple thing, and it takes some thinking, though. Do you understand this? It takes thinking. It takes us to slow down. It takes us to say, hey, listen, I can't be on autopilot and make judgments on something of the basis other than facts and reasons. I need fact and reasons that I've got to slow down. That principle will help us overcome deception. Let me show you another verse, Leviticus 19. You know what we do when we deceive another? When we take advantage of another? The Bible says, whoever hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. Listen to this verse, Leviticus 19. It goes back to this being a stranger. You shall not go about as a talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him. So here's discerning and pointing out sin. Look at verse 18. You shall not take vengeance, nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Ever wondered what it means to love your neighbor as yourself? Here we are. Bitterness, unfairness, taking advantage of others. All right. We'll finish this outline next week and have a new one. I hope you've enjoyed the study, enjoyed talking to you tonight. Thank you.